Hey guys, Tim here. Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Or maybe you've got one that just doesn't seem to be growing the way you want it to. I'm going to be teaching an online course to share everything I've learned about growing Dropping the Gloves. In this course, we'll be covering how to start your own show and plan your content, monetize your podcast, build an audience, create a brand identity, leverage audience feedback, and analyze data in a way that's actionable. Here's the catch, though. You can find information about basically all of those things from a simple Google search. So I'm not going to share boring how-tos or best practices. Instead, I'll be sharing real stories from our experience with growing the show and the important lessons we learned along the way. Mistakes we made, what we wish we did differently, and how we turned a fun side project into a real business. And most importantly, how you can apply these lessons to your own podcasts. It's a 90-minute class that you can attend either of two nights, October 23rd and November 14th. You can find a link to more information in the bios of any of our social media pages, but also feel free to message me if you have any questions. I hope to see you there.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us here on another episode of Dropping the Gloves, episode 571. Tim, very exciting. And it could be the best one yet. We have an interview today with a legit Hollywood superstar. It's not very often you come across guys like this. He's a Renaissance man. He does it all. He acts. He was a Stanley Cup champion. He does it all. Jordan Nolan is joining the show. Jordan, thank you for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, what a pleasure. So I know you via your father. Obviously, I played with him. His dad, I think everybody knows. I know it's Ted Nolan. He was my coach in Buffalo before he got unceremoniously ousted for the second time, which is a whole other ball of wax we're not going to get into. This is about Jordan today. So we do these agendas, Jordan, and I didn't realize you're two-time cup champ. I knew the one.
Yeah, I say...
Yeah, how do you do one in the quarter?
No, I do more than that.
Like a half?
No.
Three quarter? Not two. Two and a quarter?
I go as far as saying two and a half.
When you say people, though, hey, I'm Jordan, two-time Stanley Cup champ, or do you go, how do you introduce yourself?
I just say I'm Jordan Nolan. Nice to meet you, usually. I don't, I don't talk about... I'm Jordan Nolan, LA Kings, two-time Stanley Cup champion, Jim on Crave, Shoresy. So, but no, I keep it simple, just Jordan Nolan. But no, I was there for, I played every game in 2012. Mm-hmm. And then 2014, I was a regular. And I started the first series against San Jose. We went down 3. And then they put in Pearson, I believe. So yeah. And then... I was also with St. Louis up and down for most of the year. I played, I want to say 19 games that season. And then I joined them for the cup run where we can get into all this later, but I got and then I took warm up because Barbashev or Sundquist got suspended in the finals in Boston. So it was between me and Sanford to go on game 3, I think. At home in St. Louis. So it was pretty close. I would have played that one game to get my name on the third one.
Let's get into that right now. I don't care about later. What happened? Why weren't you on the roster? You obviously had some playoff pedigree. You like you said, you played 20 games in the playoffs for your first playoff in 12. Why not? What happened in St. Louis?
St. Louis, I mean, it was weird because, I mean, we were black aces. We didn't join the team until... the second round, you know how it is. You skate on your own. You're not skating with the team. You're not working out with the team. So I pretty much would hop on the ice at the end of practice or morning skate. And then we would play a little 3-on-3 game, have some fun. And then that would go on for a couple of weeks, right, until the Stanley Cup Finals. And then one day, Sundquist or Barbashev got suspended. And then my name was on the practice roster. So it took practice and you know, I think it was, you know, one of the coaches, they want to make sure you're getting ready to play. Like, there's a very good chance you could play. Where, you know, I haven't played since April, I believe, in the American League. And Sanford played, I think he played near the end of the season. But Sanford was from Boston also. Again, it's, you know how it is. It's just,
oh yeah.
It's a big series, but you're a fourth line player. You kind of have that pedigree of what they need. So, you know, chip it out. Don't turn it over. Don't make any mistakes. That's pretty much your job, right? In those kind of series. But no, they went with Sanford, and I think he played really well that game, I believe. But they told me like how close it was to being in that game.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. I've obviously never been in that situation, but let's backtrack. I think we got ahead of ourselves. I think you were right. We should have started from the beginning. This is a fighting show, Jordan, as you know, dropping the gloves. I was known for fighting in the NHL. I want to talk about your fighting. Was it always a part of your game? I know I don't want to keep bringing up your dad, but he's a hard-nosed type player. He was the guy who gave me, I got third-line minutes playing for him, for Pete's sake. What was that always ingrained in you growing up? Because you're from Ontario, I want to say. Was it Northern just a part Ontario. Of your lifestyle growing up, and then it just translated into hockey, or how does that happen?
I was always pretty competitive growing up, whether you're playing, you know, on the schoolyard with your friends or playing pickup hockey with your buddies. I was always super competitive. So as soon as while I got older and those you're allowed to fight really in junior hockey, you figured out you were just half decent at it. But for me, it was all about competing and fighting when you're angry. I rarely did it casually. There always had to be a reason why I did it in junior hockey.
Yeah.
And as pro hockey comes around, things are a little bit different. But no, I wouldn't say I love fighting, but I think the competitive juices were flowing. Then you enjoy it. You get into the game, and that's what I like.
Do you remember an outdoor game you played versus San Jose? I was on the roster of the Sharks, and all I wanted to do was get into a fight. That's pretty much was my main objective, is to fight at the 49ers stadium. I asked you, I asked Clifford, I asked Matt Green, and nobody would fight me. Why were the LA Kings afraid to fight outside?
I think you were playing a lot of minutes that night.
At least six.
I think the coach was feeling pretty good about you, so... You know, we wanted to watch you go up and down that ice.
They're always their excuse, Tim. You don't get enough minutes.
Yeah, so we wanted to watch. We wanted to enjoy the game. You know, we wanted to just play and have fun out there. That's what a lot of those games are about. But like I said before, I would rarely square up with someone I didn't like it.
Yeah,
didn't enjoy it. If someone asked me off the face-off, I would generally tell them to take a run at someone or take a run at me.
No,
I would need kind of that. I would need kind of that engagement in order to be into the fight. So whenever I would just say, yeah, sounds good, I generally didn't do well. Or I would feel the need to take a run at someone, and then that would get me going a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't enjoy just saying, yeah, sounds good. I wasn't good at those.
I'm interested, why did your career end so early? Because I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think you had injury issues, right? What happened? Because you're a very valuable player. You can obviously keep up with the play. You have some playoff experience. What happened? Because you're a young kid still.
Yeah, I mean, I got called up in 2012 as a 22-year-old. I spent five seasons with the Kings, where we won two cups.
Mm-hmm.
I did have back surgery in LA near the end. That probably has something to do with it now that you think about it. But I did have back surgery. That was a 6-month recovery at the end of the season. And then the following season, I had groin issues near the tail end of the season. And that caused a little bit of a you know, uproar within
question mark.
Management and trainers. And then that caused back issues, and that shut me down for the season. And then Daryl was let go. Dean was let go. New management coming in. Got shipped off to Buffalo for a year. And you know, when you play on those bad teams, It's hard for anyone to kind of to get out of that. But after that season, I signed a two-way with St. Louis. Started off in the American League in San Antonio, Texas. Played really well. You know, I wanted to get back to the NHL. Played really well. Worked my way back up and down all year, pretty much. Won the team that won the cup that year. And then the following season, they signed me to a nice deal. And then they named me captain in the American League. So that's when I kind of, you know what I mean? That's when you kind of know that you're down.
The captain of an AHL team. It's good, but also not good.
Yeah. That's when you know it's kind of like no matter how well you play, you know, I'm not coming up and playing second, first, 9 minutes. So I do come up. Mm-hmm. I still think I played some of my best hockey near the end of my career as you know, get more mature and you get more comfortable. So I thought I was playing great hockey when I was out in St. Louis, but I think they prefer to have you know younger guys in those roles and give those guys opportunities. But no, I feel like also COVID happened. COVID shut down the season, took a year and a half off, went to Pittsburgh camp. That was about 2 or 3 months before we actually started playing in the American League.
Mm-hmm.
Two daughters at home, living in a hotel, getting tested every day. Going to the rink, getting tested. Have to leave right away. Can't hang out with the guys. Living in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Sound too appealing, yeah.
No, like I had Trevor Daly on my side, and they just talk about, about starting off the season right, and hopefully we'll be up there back in Pittsburgh soon enough. But at that point, it's the getting called up is not the thrill it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I just, you know, I had enough and thought it was time to try something new.
And here we are.
And here we are.
About to embark on the Shorzy saga. Look, he just looked over at the Shorzy people. He's like, see, we're segueing into Shorzy. Yep. Tim's a big Shorzy fan. I myself don't have a TV. It's a lifestyle choice. I don't want to talk about it. I very rarely bring it up, but Tim watches Shorzy religiously, right, Tim?
I watched the whole thing in like maybe 2 days because I was late to it. I didn't watch Lehner-Kenny, but then I saw someone put me on to Shorzy. I watched it in 2 nights. Really, really funny.
So how do you get involved in this? How does that work? Because this is what, season 2 or 3 of Shorzy?
Yeah, season 2 is coming out. Again, I came home in February from Pittsburgh.
Okay.
I would say like almost 6 months of like nothing, right? Because it's COVID also.
Yeah.
We couldn't work our hockey schools. We couldn't go into our communities and provide those. I was also, what am I going to do the rest of my life?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I signed up for firefighting. I graduated that last summer. I called the LA Kings if there's anything that I could do for them. So they signed me to be an ambassador and a community relations consultant. So I would be out there every other month. Helping run events. And then out of nowhere, my brother got a random email from one of the producers saying, you know, we're working on a new show. Would you be interested? And my brother called me right away and we had no clue, you know, what it was going to turn out to be. But speaking to them a little bit, they want to hear our thoughts. And yeah, so I called LA and explained the situation. So they said, yeah, no problem. Kind of have fun. We'll give you that time off. So that was really it. We got a random email. And here we are now promoting season 2.
So because you're not an actor. How does that work?
Well, I'm an actor. I'm part of the union, right?
Well, is Canada SAG-AFTRA? Or is that they got a different one in Canada?
A different one, yeah. So
okay. But it's not your trade. You're not a trained actor. Did they give you acting lessons? Do they coach you up? Do you have to go to like a crash course on the weekend and say, okay, this is how you act? Or do they just say, be yourself?
We got there a week early. We read over the script together and he would give us some points, but you know, it's pretty simple. We're just be as natural as possible. Say it how you would normally say it. Don't try and overdo it.
Mm-hmm.
But Jared Kiso, the creator of the show and star, he's very good at kind of making it feel like a team. It feels like a team effort. It feels like you're just with the boys kind of making a TV show and having fun. You know, there's no, you know, super tense moments where I don't know what I'm doing or I'm uncomfortable situation. It really does feel like you're hanging out with your teammates making a TV show about hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how it feels.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Jared Kiso. Cause he's such a, I mean, he's obviously much bigger in Canada than he is in the States, but he's getting a lot bigger here too. Like, what's he like to work with? How much like creative control does he have? Or is he kind of just letting you guys do your thing?
No, I said it earlier before, he's kind of like, he feels like he's the owner, the GM, the head coach, and your team captain. You know, he created the whole world that we're in. And again, we honestly feel like a team. Like, he's in there hanging out with us. We're having a good time. He might hear something and put it in the script. Someone might act a certain way. He might put that in the script. We walk in the dressing room, work on our filming, and he'll say, all right, take a look around the room. If it doesn't look natural, change it.
Mm-hmm.
If a goal or a fight doesn't look natural, you know, don't be afraid to speak up and then tell us how to make it better. But he's, he's a very hard worker. He's always, he knows everyone's name. He shows up and he's ready to get it done. But he also wants to be part of that team atmosphere. Like, because if we're in between takes, we're just sitting there doing what you normally do as a team. You know, we're playing music, we're having a good time, and he'll come in and join and then be called back out to film something. So it does feel like a team collaboration.
Yeah, that was my next question. Kind of already answered it. Like, what's the difference between guys that actually played in the NHL on set? Like, are you guys bringing up like bits of dialogue? Are you guys impacting like the story and everything like that, just based on your experience actually playing professional hockey versus the actors that didn't?
Yeah, it does. I'm not sure. I think Jared has a clear idea of what he wants to do and what he wants the show to look like. There are certain moments where things are said, where he would say, well, what would you say here? Or how would you do that? All the on ice action is, we have stunt coordinators, but they lean on us a lot because they want the fights to look good for TV, but they also want them to look real. So that's where we would kind of come in. But I would say, yeah, Jared generally has, he runs the show, but we're there to kind of help whenever he asks.
Do you feel like you need to be a hockey fan to enjoy the show?
No, not at all. I watched season 2 last night and I thought it was, you know, it was pretty good show. And there's so many different characters where you can relate to anyone. And that's what, you know, if the film is filmed in Northern Ontario, based in Sudbury, Ontario, and what you see in that locker room and in that city is what you're seeing on the television show. So I think it represents, you know, it feels like you're really watching a senior hockey team kind of have some fun, enjoy their off nights, and really just kind of take in Sudbury, Ontario.
Without giving any spoilers, what can we expect for season 2?
Season 2, we're back. We're better than ever. We're trying to go for a league record. we have a new rival American team, which will feature a couple players that you will recognize. We got Freddie Waugh, Patrick Waugh's son, on season 2. We just met Freddie I'm not sure if he was maybe there after in Buffalo, after you came, after you.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I never met Freddie before. And it's cool because you film these scenes where you don't really know what's going on. You read your parts, the scenes that you're in, and then you kind of don't worry about the rest. So when I watched it last night, I thought Freddie did, you know, an unreal job and a real fun character. So it's fun to see the show kind of all come together.
So we're going to bring it back a little bit to that Kings run again, because we had a lot of questions about that. We tweeted this out before the show, send in your questions for Jordan. And most of the questions, or a lot of them, were for that. And so, I mean, I think the 2012 run was probably one of the most iconic in the last 20 years, because you have an 8th seed sneaking in and going 16-4, which is just unheard of. What was special about that group for you, do you think?
Yeah, I feel like I didn't realize how special it was until the end of your career. I mean, I got called up and I was 22 years old. First time in the NHL team. It just felt like a bunch of superstars. But as I got older, I'm looking back on it now and being a part of different teams from LA to Buffalo, to St. Louis, to different organizations.
It's funny how people put the emphasis on Buffalo.
Yeah. Buffalo. Yeah, you just realize, really, it starts from the top. It starts with how Dean Lombardi set up the culture and what's expected and how intense he kind of made that atmosphere. You know, I wouldn't wear a hat to the rink, and you wouldn't want to wear flip flops. He had that mentality, and then to bring in Daryl to kind of make sure he's whipping you guys into shape. But really, just look at the team. I think like Brownie was our captain, Kopi, who were probably the more quiet guys in that room. We had Matt Green, we had Stoll, we had Carter, we had Richards, we had Williams, we had William Mitchell. Everyone on the team was a competitor. Everyone wanted to win. It didn't feel like we had a star player to kind of jump on their back, or we had no baby. So really, it felt like a team full of competitive guys who liked to win and played hockey the right way.
How were you not just terrified coming in? Because like you said, you played a handful of regular season games, 26, and then you're playing in the Stanley Cup Finals. Were you nervous at all to make a mistake, to like mess up and just ruin a season or this and that? Because that's like, I wouldn't even know what to do in that situation.
I felt probably nervous and anxious, I would say, from the moment I got called up.
Yeah.
Until we won the Stanley Cup. Just because Daryl and Dean set such a high standard for what the team expects and how practice should be and how a game should be. And they gave it to you black and white. If you played bad, they would let you know. If you played great, it's a good job. But they had such a high demand for you, and you demand that of yourself. So there really wasn't any moments of letdown in my game or how I felt. You know, I felt like I was going to get sent down probably halfway through playoffs, even though we were steamrolling teams. But no, I would say I never once relaxed. I enjoyed being there, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't lose sleep over losing games. It's more about making sure I did the best job that I could.
What do you think about Daryl Sutter? Just how he's just being portrayed now? Because I like Daryl too. I thought he was a great coach. I thought he got the most out of his players. And then he goes to Calgary. And my opinion is he runs into some soft players who can't handle the truth, and they just throw him under the bus. So what do you think about that whole situation?
It is. Yeah, it's a different world now. The players are different. Players were treated differently growing up. For me, you know, he was always super intense. He always demanded a lot of you, mm-hmm. which was a good thing. He gave it to you black and white. But he could also be friends with you the next day. He could be buddy with you. How's your family doing? How's your dad doing? How's your wife doing? But he definitely was an intense person. Don't get me wrong. He wasn't always your friend. But certain teams need that. Certain teams need to have someone to kind of whip them in shape. And I think without him, we wouldn't have been that good. And I think it kind of brought our team together a little bit. It could be us against him in some ways, mm-hmm. Which is probably what he wanted. He wanted the team to come together. But no, I really don't have anything bad to say about Daryl. He made me a better player. He demanded a lot of myself, and he kind of always gave it to you honest. If you were playing good, you would play more. And if you weren't, you wouldn't. There wasn't no, you know, that's the way it was. And he demanded a lot from his assistant coaches, his training staff. And it wasn't just the players. You know, he was, you know, hard on everyone, but I think he was fair. It is just a lot different than what today's generation is used to.
Did he ever grab your phone and demand to look at your pictures?
No, none of that going on.
A couple guys I want to ask about. First, Jonathan Quick. I mean, arguably the best performance ever for a goalie in a playoff run. Can you talk about, I mean, just what it was like to watch him doing what he was doing every single night?
Yeah, I think just coming into, I mean, when people ask what was your welcome to the NHL moment, I would say it was my first practice with the team. How intense it was and how fast it was in Long Island and how competitive everyone was. So, I mean, watching Quickie, I felt like I wasn't saying, wow, like this guy's like standing on his head, or that's just what I saw every day. I saw him at his top level in practice. I saw how competitive he was. I saw how intense he was. So for me, it was just like watching any other goalie. But I think I was pretty spoiled with what I came into, as I learned later on.
Another guy Buffalo. I want to... Anze Kopitar. Obviously, there's a lot of leaders on that team, a lot of veterans. Here he is, 12 years later, still playing, some of his best hockey ever. Can you talk a little bit about what he was like as a player and as a leader in that room?
Very calm demeanor about him. Also very competitive. We'll kind of turn it on when he had to. Just a naturally big body. Kopi and Brown, he didn't say too much. But when they did, everyone would kind of listen. And they were the lead. They weren't the guys that stand up the bench. They come on, boys, let's get going here, or try and do that. They would get out there and compete and play hard. So they were guys that you could definitely lean on and talk to about certain things. But they also would keep the room light. They did have those kind of quiet, funny things about them. So they were both pretty funny guys. But yeah, Kopi was so big and skilled and. Again, I just felt pretty spoiled, coming into to play on some of these, future Hall of Famers.
Another listener question here is, how did your interactions with the Kings fans change from before that run, and you were kind of an up and down guy, to after being a Cup champion? How did that change with the fans?
Yeah, I feel like where we're based out of in Manhattan, Hermosa Beach, the fans always treated us well. But going into that next level of Stanley Cup champions, we were kind of the toast of the town. I think all the other LA teams weren't doing very well at the time. So we were the main show. And I honestly thought it was one of the best rinks to play in. But I think for most teams, when you're doing well, any rink is really good. But LA always has a special place in my heart, and it's a great organization. But again, the fans, they're pretty loyal, and anytime I go back there, they're always happy to see me, and that feels pretty good.
Who's the stars? Because once the playoffs roll around, we know the stars come out. I remember running into Jim Carrey, underneath this Coliseum there. Who were some of the big names that would try to be jock sniffers come playoff time?
We would have a few, because I think it was a different culture. We did have Daryl, we did have Dean.
Yeah,
you think those guys wanted celebrities coming in after every game? So we had Tom Hanks come through, Bryan Cranston. After we won, David Beckham came out with us for the night, so that was pretty cool. So yeah, I would say David Beckham came to our after party. He came to our cup celebration that management put on. That was like a dinner and everything. And then we went out to into Hollywood, and Beckham joined us. And just kind of how classy he was too. Just a really nice person. So that was pretty cool to see.
What's a party like in LA look like? Because we would go out. I remember with the Hawks, the famous story was like, Miley Cyrus was at a party, and that's when she was rumored to be dating Kaner, and everybody went and whatever. It was like a famous picture of her getting caught with some drugs, and we were in the vicinity. What's a party like in LA? Is it a house party where everybody goes and you just show up? Or are you at the club? Are you bouncing around the club? Because it's different. In Chicago, we would go to a hole in the wall pub, and that's where we would kind of post up for the night.
It was different. I mean, we had everything. We had the beach area, so we would have our private clubs there. We have a hole in the wall that guys would like to go to. And it was rare that we would go to Hollywood because it was so far. So once in a while, the young guys would have something set up there. But it was no different than, going out in New York and big cities like that. But I would say we were more of a hole in the wall kind of team.
I think that's most teams in general enjoy that.
Yeah. So I think when you go to Hollywood, it's fun to see for the first time, and you might see some people they'd never seen before. You might see, Leo at the next table, which is pretty cool.
Hold on a second. Leo who?
Some Leo guy. I forget his last name.
Are you kidding me? Really?
You see him. You know, we saw him in New York City at a place that one of the guys recommended. So little things like that obviously are pretty cool to see, but that was rare. It was rare for us to go to those big nightclubs in Hollywood.
Tim's big claim to fame is he was once at a bar with Rob Gronkowski and he took a picture of him like 50 feet away.
Rob was at a bar with me. So
you're hanging out with Leonardo DiCaprio. That's pretty legit. Like I've never seen him in real life, but that's pretty cool. All right. Get back to the fighting. What's your best fight? Because I just hockey fights you before the interview. You fought all the tough guys. And you're not 6'8", 270 pounds like I am. So you were a lot of the times fighting out of your weight class when it came to these fights. Who was your best fight, most memorable fight?
My best fight? I like that Sheldon Surrey fight. I feel like that was one of my first few ones.
Okay.
And, you know, he was a bigger name. He's a tougher guy. So I feel like I did really well there. That was one of the more memorable ones. I fought Luch in Boston. Mm-hmm. I feel like that Matt Carter?
Yeah.
He was pretty tough. He was a big boy. So I think once we started going, like, it felt like we're going toe to toe for like 10 seconds. But when you watch the video, it's like 0.2 seconds. So I think I pulled out of that pretty quick. We're like, oh, I'm not doing this.
But, what's it like knowing going into a fight? Because I never, like I said, I'm a monster. I suck at hockey, but I'm huge. Is it intimidating going into a fight knowing you're giving up 30 pounds and like 5 inches when you fight a dirtbag like Tom Sestito?
I was never scared. I was never scared to fight. There's at times where maybe your heart wasn't in it, like you didn't want to do it for sure. That's why for me, it was tough to line up or just say, hey, you want to go? I needed a hit, or I needed someone to say something. I needed that close interaction. I always like starting close and never like squaring up. But no, I was never once scared going into a fight. Chris Neal, I think, was his 1,000th game in L.A.
You fought him on his 1,000th game?
I had a big hit. And I forget what the score was, but I mean, it was Ottawa. They probably weren't great at the time. He asked me.
Jordan just throwing barbs here.
It was one of those ones where you just couldn't, like, you couldn't say no. It's 1,000th game. And my heart wasn't in that one. I didn't get killed or anything like that, but.
Imagine if you knocked out Chris Neal and ended his career on his 1,000th.
Yeah. Game. It's also that side of things. You don't want to, like.
Well, you do. It'd be like a trivia question.
Yeah, so it's not like you want to try and you're gonna think about killing the guy. You're just thinking about kind of getting through it, really.
So you mentioned mental is a huge part of your fighting game. How do you get up for a fight then? Do you have to get some? Does someone have to lay out one of your teammates in order for you to get engaged in a fight? Like, what does it take for your wires to cross and you want to fight somebody?
It takes a lot, I would say.
Yeah?
It wasn't natural. Even like, yeah, like I would need something. I would have to go, even to play games, I would have to go out and get a big fight or push someone to get myself into the game right away. Because the coach was always saying, like, as soon as you get in that fight, you play a lot better.
No kidding.
It was true because it got me more engaged. So, yeah, I would have to find a way to get myself engaged to do that.
That's interesting.
Even at the end of my career in the American League, I would find someone on each team who I knew I was going to play against all night, and I would make a point to kind of take runs at them to get myself engaged. I had nothing to do with the guy, but to get myself engaged in the game.
Imagine being that
that's
guy.
Why my, I think that's why my career was a little short too, because I could never just kind of go out there and fight when we're down. And
yeah,
I didn't like doing that. And I think my career probably would have been longer if I would have been willing to do that more.
The guy's like, that Nolan's buried me like 6 times tonight. I don't know what I did to him. But he just saw over my case. That's so interesting that you acknowledge you know what the issue is to not be engaged in the game. It's because you just can't mentally check in. That's so interesting to me because I didn't like fighting also. But as soon as the gloves hit the ice, I'm like, let's go. I'm going to win this fight. The competitive juices started flowing. Do you ever regret not having that switch to be able to go, okay, like this, because you just said my career could have been longer.
No, I don't think so. I don't really regret too much. No, I was happy with the way my career went. Mm-hmm. I'm happy with where I am now in my life. And, but yeah, it was a constant, struggle is not the word, but it was a constant something I had to, okay, I got to get myself up for this one.
Yeah.
I think it's easier when you're playing in the American League and you're playing more minutes and you're engaged in the game. But when you're playing the 6 to 8 minutes, it's pretty hard depending on your character and how you, approach the game. So for me, it was, a challenge. And I would generally find a way to get myself engaged.
Yeah.
Right away. But that's what it wasn't a natural thing for me. I had to find a way to get involved in the game.
No, I didn't like fighting either. I've said it a bunch where it's not natural to go out and fist fight somebody at the drop. I hate the stage fighting too. It's fascinating. You don't hear many people say that what you're saying. It's very not common.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, my dad has always known that about me. It's, I'm just a more laid back approach on life. And it does take a little bit of,
does that drive him nuts? Because you can see the physical assets you have. And he's like, come on, Jordan, just do it.
Yeah. That was his main thing was, you know, working hard and really just hard work. So,
yeah.
But if he didn't see I was engaged, you know, he would let me know. He wasn't afraid to let me know. He didn't care if I made good plays or this and that. It was more if I was engaged in the game and showed some intensity out there.
This is fascinating to me, Tim. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Well, Tim does this rapid fire, Jordan. I know you got a 3 o'clock card out. The Shorzy people are probably poking your chair saying, let's go, let's go. So we got 9 minutes, Tim. We're going to do rapid fire. Then we're going to follow up with some Shorzy closers. So, Tim, take it away.
Okay, just rapid fire answers. Favorite pregame meal?
Chicken parm.
Favorite subject in school?
I actually like religion. I like religion.
Nice. Celebrity crush?
Probably Ava Mendez back in the day. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. That's nice. You got to get her on the show.
Hardest defenseman to play against in your career?
Chara.
Love it. This might be a tough one. At what age were you no longer the best player on your team?
4. That's my answer.
I felt like I was a pretty good player. I felt like I was, this is rapid fire, you want it quick?
You can answer however you want.
I felt like I was one of the top players growing up. I think I led our team in points in the OHL. I was a first, second line player in the American League when I was getting called up, had power play and PK. And I kind of fell into that. I wasn't a top NHL player, obviously. But I would say, when I turned pro.
Favorite vacation spot?
Hermosa Beach.
All right, last question. We have a lot of young kids that listen to the show. What advice do you give the young hockey players about growing their game and being better hockey players?
I still ask myself that question, but no, I think it's important to kind of have no regrets. I think it's important to, whether you go into a training session or you go into practice, when you go into a game, you don't want to look back and say, oh, I should have worked harder. I should have, tried this or tried that. So again, for myself, it was more about the, getting engaged in the game. So I would always look back and go, I probably should have played harder tonight. I probably should have did more. So I think having no regrets and kind of knowing you put it all out on the line. And even for schooling, when I did firefighting, I didn't want to have regrets saying, oh, I should have studied more for that test. I want to feel as confident as I can going into it. So I think preparation and having kind of no regrets after that, you want to feel ready and you want to feel like you're putting your best foot forward.
That's great advice, Tim. It is.
I wrote it down.
You know what I find interesting? We have a lot of fourth line, third line gay guys on the show. All of them are their best players in the OHL. And you go and look at the stats, it's like, yeah. So people think these fourth line guys are just, you know, can't shoot a puck or this and that. It's like, no, they're the best players on their team in the OHL and in college and in the AHL. Everybody's good. I wasn't, but for the most part, top to bottom, everybody's crazy talented. Yeah. It's just remarkable. Yeah, I find that just very interesting.
It's really just the stars and the studs that, you know, separate themselves.
I don't know how I got there, but everybody else is a star from their team. I was always the worst player. Like, I'm at top 10 on my team for every team up until pro. Then I was the worst.
Found a way.
I was the worst guy every year at my team in the NHL, which is fine. Right, Jordan?
That's right.
It's not. Were you? Who was the worst player on the LA Kings when you were there?
Worst player?
Yeah.
Colin Frazier.
Oh, I hate Fraz. I agree. Worst hair, too. Like, I've never seen a Brillo pad.
Yeah, we had our 10-year reunion in the summer, last summer, so for the 2012 run. So it was good to see him again. And he was on my golfing team, actually, so bad golfer, too.
This is an all-around bad guy.
Yeah, terrible.
This you want a friend like Jordan, Tim. That's what you want. Just he's one of a kind. All right, Tim, wrap it up with some Shorzy stuff, and then we'll let him go because it's almost 3 o'clock.
Yeah, season 2 is coming out. Where can our listeners watch it? Where can they find it?
They can find it on Crave tomorrow. The first 2 episodes air, and then it's every Friday. A new episode is coming out, and then in the States, it's October 27th.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm dialed in today. So
what network in the States? Is it Crave in the States as well?
Hulu. Yeah.
Hulu. That's like a big time station.
That's right. We're big time. We're Crave's number one show, I believe, when it debuted for season 1.
Are you signed on for season 3?
Nothing's been announced there, so we don't know what's going on.
Your character doesn't die?
I don't think so, unless, I don't believe so, but no.
That's exciting. All right. Well, thank you very much, Jordan Nolan, for being on. I appreciate it. Check it out, Shorzy, tomorrow on Crave, 8 o'clock Eastern. Is that right?
At midnight.
It debuts on midnight?
Right? At midnight.
Whose idea was that?
It's good to go. You're ready whenever you wake up. When I start it, you can start it.
Is it only internet stuff? Or I thought Crave was like a TV channel.
No. Everything's streaming now, John.
Is it all streaming?
Yeah.
We'll cut that last part out. All right. Check it out. It drops on midnight on crave.com. Check it out, everybody. Shorzy, Jordan Oler. What's your character name again?
Jim.
Just straight Jim.
Yeah. Jim, yeah.
I love it. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Jordan Nolan, for being here. I appreciate it, man. Good luck with season 2. We'll talk to everybody next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.